Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
And Kirk, I'm sorry, as soon as I got this up and running, I said, I hate Microsoft. And I know it's a big company and there's lots of wonderful people there. Yes. Yeah, we were chatting about this, that, and the other thing. We're ready to push the... I says, Kirk, we got to hit record. And then I couldn't find the record button. And we're using a company or a product that Skype or Microsoft bought, right, years ago. And So my first inkling was, I just need to restart it, right? It's a Microsoft thing. Just reboot. Yeah. But I didn't have to reboot the whole system, just the app. And the app comes back up and it says, oh, you need to install. It won't work anymore. We had to reinstall. So I reinstall that. And then I reinstall the recording feature of it because they're separate for whatever reason. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So anyway, that's why I'm venting a little bit. But the why couldn't this thing have told me when I first powered it up, like 20 minutes ago when we first fired it up, hey, you can record, but there's an update available. It's not required to upgrade before you can do this feature. It didn't even give a warning or a heads up or anything. And that just irritates me. Yeah. It's not like they
failure
didn't know.
Software engineer failure.
Yeah, but it's just, and we were chatting about, you know, this, I think one of the things you brought up, and we were chatting a little bit earlier about wildfires and our PG&E out here and all this stuff, but you mentioned one that just caught my attention is, oh, we got to hit record. And it was, you know, the guy that whoever invented, guy or woman or person or whatever, or company invented the smoke alarm, saved way more people than firemen did.
Right.
Right. And so it brought up that concept of, you know, is it better to prevent or to respond? And it's in so many different areas, but that smoke alarm thing really brought it home to me. It's like, wow. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And we don't know who it was, who invented the first one. It might be a patent someplace we could find.
Yeah. And we were really talking about this in the concept of reliability engineering too. We looked at the division between the group of the population of engineers and reliability engineers that are involved in pre-production and designing reliability into the product, versus the guys that are, you know, on a factory floor with production equipment, you know,
or customer service, you know, customer service,
right, going out to field service calls, things like that. Yep. But the guy who's in the plant trying to maintain the equipment, scheduling the maintenance and actually responding to failures.
Right.
Because I was in that role, I was a field service engineer for semiconductor equipment, for I&M planners, thin film deposition, other things that were quite expensive price wise. You know, they were $1 million to, you know, much more machines that were critical to making semiconductors. Well, when they were down, you know, they would pile the wafer. They were only 6-inch wafers.
The foops. Yeah. The little foops you were dealing with.
Little foops. Next to the I&M planner, you know, showing that it was really impacting their cost of production. And so getting that back up, you know, you were the hero. This was getting things going again.
Yep.
And we know that from the fact that just manufacturing companies have to have equipment operating all the time, that this is a after-the-fact requirement. And this is why you'll find, I mean, all companies have in manufacturing have these engineers much more than the companies that probably, and we've experienced this, that do spend their money up front in prevention. And it kind of correlates, as you mentioned, to smoke detectors versus the firemen saving people from a burning building.
Well, even in product development, I've run into it where we have a failure in a prototype or an issue that shows up like a week before we're turning on manufacturing, and it's all hands on deck and the team, you know, stays up all weekend and solves it. And then they're taken out to dinner and get free, you know, parking spots out front and all kinds of cool stuff. They're celebrated, saving the program. Whereas the four other schmucks that just solved, you know, 10 times that many potential issues quietly and just part of their job get nothing. Yeah, whatever.
Right.
You know, that's what you're supposed to do.
Or they don't fix that thing, and it becomes a field issue.
No, I know how to fix that. Yeah. I actually ran into an engineer that says, why bother, you know, doing this? Because there's no reward or benefit to identifying, solving problems early. Whereas if it becomes an emergency, you get a bonus. I mean, they actually got a bonus if they were the one to solve a perceived big problem. And so it was like, yeah, you know, it's always a judgment call. It's something that you should have fixed or not. And I err on, if nobody notices, I'm not going to fix it. Because if it becomes an issue, I'm already ready to solve it. And it was built into the culture that if you give the promotion to the people that solve it after it's a problem, then why fix it?
Yeah. You know, if it may be an error, or maybe somebody going through a building and saying, well, this might start a fire, or it's likely to, the oily rag problem or something. Yeah, yeah. That, you know, he says, well, that's okay. I've got the fire, I'm going to stand by here outside the building with my fire hose ready.
That's right. I'll just wait for it to be a fire.
I'm not going to tell him to correct it. But I know that if I have the fire hose ready, I'm going to be ready. I'm going to be the hero.
I'll be on the front page of the paper and everything else.
Exactly. Before the whole building goes down. So he already has a solution to the problem.
Oh, yeah.
But he also knows the challenge, especially as you just put the scenario that they're about to ready to ship and, 2 weeks out the door. And you've just found a problem that would cause, require a delay in that.
Yeah.
Well, you've got all these other customers that are lined up, either put in orders or whatever.
Oh, manufacturing's all lined up, marketing's all lined up.
And you've already bought all the parts,
Now you're back ordered and everything. Yeah,
exactly. So, saying this may cause a problem. Maybe for some engineers, they're like, well, if it is, I know what the solution is. I'll come in and do the hero swoop.
Well, the issue is that the last minute save or putting out the burning building is very visible, right?
It's
urgent. It's in your face. You got to solve it. And
you saw the problem in the field.
And there's gratitude by all concerned, and they're going to show gratitude various ways, different kinds of rewards and bonuses and benefits and everything else. And even if just acknowledgement, whereas if a program goes through development and launches on time, hits the targets, has a great, low failure rates, not a big issue. There's no big dilemma in the field that crops up 6 months later. And it just works. Just works. The team might get an extra $10 or whatever, but Kirk, and I think most of our listeners know, there was a handful of people that actually went the extra mile to do the due diligence to ferret out all of those uncertainties. And if when you notice something that's not quite right, you make sure it gets solved.
Right.
The people step up and it's really the culture of the organization. If it's don't let anything slip by, we fix things as we go. And what's hard to see though, and I've seen it because I saw companies that were in firefighting mode and it's chaos, right? It just is not a pleasant place to work.
Then
there's companies that they do a good job. And once in a while we get an issue and we go solve it, but it's not a daily thing by any means. And it's a joy working there, right? People have time, they relax, they go home for dinner, they have weekends off, they do all this. But that's not the reward is not as visible. That's the hard part.
And it's not as exciting as the firefighting, the guys.
Where some people get on that, right? They love the adrenaline and just go.
Yeah. Turn on the fire engine and run to the disaster and then be the hero.
There's a rush for that. Yeah.
And it's very sad in cases where, like the Challenger disaster, the engineers closest to the problem knew that it wasn't designed to be launched at that temperature and didn't, and actually said the O-rings hadn't been tested to that temperature and we haven't really tested that seal and that this is a high risk and management overruling them because of the pressure and everything, which of course was the resulting disaster was much worse than anybody could ever imagine. But But that's kind of, you know, the pressure on the lower level engineer that does discover it at the last minute. It becomes a real dilemma for him to, you know, bring that up to management or just hold his tongue and wait for the field. And yeah, to see if it is a field failure. And then, you know, he may be disconnected, though. That's another problem. Mm-hmm. Is he may be in the department. You know, they hand it off. It's throwing it over the wall to manufacturing. Yeah. And then he's no longer involved. And then he gets the feedback later about this problem component or problem issue that he may have identified as a risk, but decided not to bring it up and, you know, could have warned him. Oh, now he can't. Yeah. I told you so.
Yeah. And I found that I told you so never works. It's not never a good line. It never works. Personal relationships, especially, just don't do that. At work, it's not effective either.
Yeah.
But the idea here is that I ran into a vice president once, and he was newly minted a vice president, got a big bonus. He was all happy with himself, gave me his new card, made sure to point out that he's now a vice president of this company. And I'm like, wow, congratulations, whatever. And so, and he was the director, now the vice president of customer field service repairs or field right. or customer service. So their right. their product would fail in the field and they ship it back to these guys and they would swap out, pretty much rebuild the product in yeah. a couple hours and then ship it back to them. So they could do same day turnaround repairs.
Right.
And he said, and he had like 80 people, this big room full of people swapping out parts. And it says, do you even do a Pareto of what part? He goes, no, because it's just random. We replace all kinds of stuff. And sometimes it's a connector problem. Sometimes it's a bad board. We don't care. We don't have time to diagnose this stuff.
Come on.
And well, do you talk to the development team? It's why? They already made the mistake. I'm not, you know, I'm just trying to fix it. That's my job. I get paid to get things fixed. And it says, well, what would happen if you didn't have as many problems? And
yeah.
And it became clear that he said, well, I'd lose staff. And I says, so right. is that a bad thing? He goes, yeah, I wouldn't be vice president anymore. If I don't have this empire, yep. I don't get to be this highfalutin VP anymore. He didn't say it directly, but I pulled it out of him. And, and I was like, what is it you're trying to actually do? And he says, well, I'm trying to serve the customer. I says, well, what serves the customer better? Sending you a broken piece of equipment to get repaired, even if it's just one day, or a product that actually works?
Right.
You know, and they don't have to take it down off the dismount right. and send it to you.
Right, right.
And he kind of went, oh. He just kind of like, and it was one of those moments I've done it a number of times. Do you want me to yeah. tell your boss or should you, do you want to tell your boss or should I?
We're well, that's where you this. Hope he has two different manufacturers of the same kind of product, and he sees a difference between the two.
Oh, they didn't even look.
That could be the case, but
well, he didn't even look. They had like 8 or 9 different product exactly. lines, and exactly. the guys and I was working with could see the difference because they had a mole in that group that was looking at because certain parts were only used on certain models, and
right.
so the looking at the stocking of spares, they were able to tell which models were doing better than others. Just yeah. in gross numbers coming back, where they had right. no visibility of what was failing, no access to do failure analysis. They were anybody that asked those questions was getting in the way.
Exactly.
And I like,
they threw away the most valuable information that that company had to protect their silo.
Yeah.
And that's just the same, you know, as this guy coming up to me and the you know, DOD contractor saying, hey, this would be great if I could, you know, this prevention stuff, Halton House, would be great if it weren't for 60% of my budget being profits coming from repair and service. Yeah. You know,
why would I make it better? I'd take a pay cut. So yeah. one of the things, you know, it's what we've talked about in all these examples in your DOD guy coming to you and the hero in the plant or the field service person or this VP, it's part of where the immediate gratification is or where the reward is or where the benefit is or perceived mm-hmm. benefit. And right. the hard part is if you do prevention type things and it just works, it's then becomes assumed. It ratchets up and says, well, you got to make sure it works longer and cheaper next time. And there's no emergency. There's nothing to bring focus to it. And that right. I think is the stem of the problem. Of
right.
So if you're doing good work in preventing problems, it's, in my mind, I think part of the solution is you got to make that visible. You know, it's not, I told you so. It's like, Now, if we don't change this, you know, it will cause these kinds of problems. Here's the evidence. If we, you know, like you find something in Holt, you do the analysis to say, right, you know, if we don't fix this, it's going to be in 20% of the products.
Right.
And so we got to fix this, or it's a safety hazard. We have to fix this.
Right.
But then you go on and you solve that and you keep looking for other stuff. It's then capture that, say, this is what we did and this is why it made a difference, because otherwise it's invisible.
It is. And your worth is also invisible if you do that. I mean, if you don't, you know, right. And that's the dilemma, is that you have to show, and you may be able to do this, of course, with field data, that this mechanism or this particular submodule was unreliable, or had the same failure mechanism, or a similar type thing that you could say this also showed up in the field. If you don't have that, you're kind of just going on, you know, speculation that or your knowledge of detailed failures and mechanisms.
No, I had one engineer tell me, I had 10 prototypes, right? And
yeah.
And I'm in Holt, and they were little, is high volume, low cost thing. So I had a whole handful of them for the Holt. And one of them, the wire, the battery wire from the battery compartment was a bare chunk of wire, and it rubbed through the circuit board and discharged the battery completely. It of course wore through on the opposite pole and just dead short. And melted plastic, and you open up the chamber and you can smell the burning stuff. I'm like, whoa, that doesn't work. So 9 out of 10 of them did it at 20 GRMS, random vibration. And he goes, well, one of them didn't fail, so that's good, right? Let's use that design. They were the exact same design.
Just like, build them all that way.
And yeah, just build them that way.
That was built.
Yeah, and that one had just like 2 millimeters more clearance. So if I would have increased the vibration just slightly, it would have gone. And it's like, no.
That's why you got to take it to the limit.
Yeah.
That's why you got to keep going.
But this guy was just, it's not a real problem. It won't affect all the products. I go, no, based on our rough estimate here, it'll only affect 9 out of 10 of them.
Don't worry. There's 10% that'll work.
That's right. And so the program manager is, no, we got to fix that. So he saw that right in the hand. But yeah, sometimes it's just, you know, it's crude.
Sometimes
it's not
easy.
Proper. So sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's, you know, it happened at 90 degrees and we're supposed to operate at 30, 40 degrees on occasion. You know, is that enough margin? It's not. Is it a cumulative damage? Is it not? But the point is that there's a variety of different ways people operate and feel important or rewarded or acknowledged or whatever. There's all kinds of things. And sometimes it's a straight out bonus. And if the organization recognizes the heroes as opposed to the people that are doing the preventative type stuff, then we end up down in this fire department type, you know, standing by waiting for something to burn up, and we'll go put it out.
And we know the guy that made the smoke detector saved billions, not billions of lives.
Lots and lots of lives.
And we don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Nobody knows, you know, he should get the Nobel Prize or something.
Well, hopefully
I know
there's
a lot of people involved in it.
Yeah.
You know, there were other designers, but the guy that came up with the ionized detector mechanism, whatever. He didn't.
Well, he got $100 and a plaque for his patent, you know. It's kind of one of those things. But the idea is that you need to step back and look at what's going on in your organization, and is it, you know, are you in a hero culture or in a preventative culture, and which way do you want to shift it? Which is more suitable for your organization and serving your customers? And be aware that there are oftentimes fundamental systems in place that it's well beyond reliability engineering work. But if you want to make a change in an organization and the bonus goes to the hero, then there's going to be heroes. If the bonus goes to the program that actually ships a product that meets all its goals and just works, then let's create products that just work. And then we get a bonus, or, you know, whatever the incentives are. But it's something to be very conscious of, is that, yeah, everybody will say, yeah, we want to lower the failure rate. But you might have headwinds in doing that just because of the way the reward systems are set up in the organization.
Right. You have conflicts of interest for, like you mentioned previously, the guy didn't get, you know, his department would have shrunk if the product become more reliable.
Yeah. Yeah. So. No, he ended up actually hiring a couple of statisticians. So he kept his headcount up while they actually started collecting the data and making some nice fundamental changes. The development team really sucked it up. And so he expanded more into like a failure analysis department and a statisticians department and stuff like that. And they ended up being a pretty nice all-around department. And eventually, I talked to one of those folks I was working with a few years later, is that they didn't need as many repair people, but they did much smarter repairs.
So he becomes a hero in a different way. Yeah. You know, I mean, he still capitalized on what he was doing and the fact that it was very highly visible. That's the thing. That's the field failures and customers being mad at you is very highly visible.
Right. But when they're happy, they don't see the same problem over and over again. Then it remains visible, and so it worked out in the end. But anyway, I just hope I see the preventative firefighter guys around my house, because they come out every year, a couple of years, and walk around saying, hey, you need to trim that or fix that or do that, as opposed to the crew with the lights on and the big masks and saying, hey, you got to evacuate, because here in California, we're heading into that zone.
There's a fire coming. We're going to save your life. Yeah. Well, the guy that helped you clear, you know, but yeah, it's only so much you can do.
That's true. So we'll hope for the best on that. But if you've, run into this issue, and I know, Kirk, you and I and a handful of us have talked about this dilemma before, is that, what I'd really like to hear is how did you solve it? If one of the listeners, if you recognize this and help an organization change out of this hero mentality or firefighting mentality, what was the key? What was the pivotal thing that made that difference? And it could range from all kinds of things, but you could tell us. Head over to ascendoverliability.com/go/SOR. And on that page, there's a contact form, and there's also a SpeakPipe widget that allows you to essentially leave a voicemail for us. And then we could use that in a future episode. And I did it again, Kirk. I was recording with Carl the other day. I forgot to check to see if we had any recordings. So I should do that real quick. But the idea is that you can actually join the conversation, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. Or if you've got a question or something that's on your mind, you'd like us to chat about it and get you an answer as best we can, let us know. Same address, same kind of thing. Or you can find Kirk or I or the other hosts of the show up on LinkedIn or on our About pages on Ascendo. So there's plenty of ways you can get in touch and be part of the conversation, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yes. Thank you for listening.
All right. Thanks, Kirk. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you soon, Fred.
Yes. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.